There, welcome to another episode of The Leftovers, where we talk about stories I didn't get a chance to talk about on the show. Although I will say, in full disclosure, I'm cheating a little bit today because I'm recording this before the show, as I have a Hannity appearance later this evening, Thursday, for those of you who are listening, and the day that I record. So I wouldn't have had enough time to stick around and record my podcast and then get to the studio. So I cheat from time to time. Normally, I don't cop to the cheating. I just let you think. But, this time I decided to. Because, I'm a man of integrity every so often. There was a story in the Seattle Times that I decided to do here instead of on air. Because it's very meaty. And I don't want you to feel like I'm shortchanging you on some meaty conversations. And it's by Nina Shapiro in the Times, who has a tendency, and I don't know if it's because she has to stay employed there, or it's her editors, or she's just really partisan, but she frames stories in very disingenuous ways, very partisan ways, even though it's not even really necessary. But I guess when you're hell-bent on making some sort of political point, you just lean into it. Now, the title is Immigrant Who Died in ICE Custody Spent 13 Years in Solitary, Many in Washington Prisons. Now, this is about a guy named Charles Daniel, who had spent some time in the ICE facility in Tacoma, the Immigrant Detention Center, and he was put there in solitary confinement for almost 4 years that he was detained, and he ends up dying. Now, they don't give us a cause of death at this point. The implication is, or the suspicion, I suppose, is that it was some kind of suicide. He's 61 years old. He was from Trinidad and Tobago. So he's in this country illegally from Trinidad and Tobago. And the story says it turns out that he was held far longer in solitary confinement than was previously reported, over 13 years. And that, they say, is because before entering the ICE detention facility, he was spending almost a decade in isolation while he was serving time in state prisons. And this is essentially, and again, it's so long. It's such a long story. You kind of get tired halfway through. It's just like, come on, man. Most of this stuff isn't even necessary. But what they're trying to do here, in a long line of activists and politicians and other activists, journalists, this article appears to want to make us feel sad for Charles Daniel and the situation, and maybe even blame the criminal justice system for keeping him in isolation, because there's a goal of the abolitionist groups not merely to close prisons. They know that's not going to happen overnight. So what they try to do is get rid of isolation, solitary confinement. They want to make life as enjoyable as humanly possible for victims in their eyes. Not to us. You and I see these people as criminals, felons, but to these people on the radical left, they are victims of an unjust society. And the fact that this guy was in this country illegally automatically gets him support from a large group of very vocal police abolitionists, prison abolitionists, and really, I guess, border abolitionists. They want an open border. But there are two pieces of details that either completely get left out of the story, or they are buried at the end. And they're both pretty important, I would argue, because it gives some context. So, for example, after spending a whole lot of time talking about the plight of someone who lives in isolation and how it could cause mental health issues, they talk about how, there are alternatives. Why didn't they do this? Making him out to be the victim. All the way towards the end of the story, after talking about how politicians, including Maria Cantwell and Patty Murray, our two senators, sent a letter to Homeland Security and ICE alleging that this was an abuse of solitary confinement, all the way at the end, it says, detention center leadership, along with medical and mental health professionals, meet weekly to review cases and consider a change in status, because segregation placements, quote, are not intended to be long-term housing. But Daniel
may have wanted it to be.
The Center for Human Rights determined that, according to ICE records, the Trinidad and Tobago citizen requested a segregated cell at the detention center. Let's say that one more time.
He requested a segregated cell at the detention center.
Nina Shapiro continues, such a placement could be a good thing if a person feels anxious and unsafe in the general population, said Stern, someone who works at the Center for Human Rights. This is a former DOC health official. It's also possible, he said, that Daniel's nearly 10 years in prison isolation could have worsened mental health problems that led to the request. Now, could y'all put that at the top of the story instead of all the way at the end of the story? Because that seems like kind of an important detail that he was requesting it. And you give some additional context. It says some people have been in solitary for so long that it makes them nervous to be around others. She would like to see Seavers with Disability Rights Washington would like to see correctional institutions look into the reason why someone requests isolation and work with that person on a plan to feel safe in the general population. Okay, yeah. But why not put that kind of at the top just to set the stage with some context? You can still hold a view that just because someone asks for solitary confinement doesn't mean that you need to give it to them, right? I mean, you can put that at the top. Although, ironically, I would argue that in this state especially, if someone who is at an ICE detention center or spending time in a prison who's in this country legally, when they make asks like this, if you don't listen to them, if you don't give in, well, they're going to get mad at you there. So it's kind of a lose-lose in a circumstance like this. But that was a big detail that was just completely missed until the way at the end. And it's odd that they couldn't at least mention it, even if it was in passing, just to establish this as a reality. Now, beyond that, there's something that isn't mentioned at all, according to this story. I mean, I shouldn't say at all. I should say the details are not reported at all. You learn with, I think it was just a total of maybe one sentence about his background, his criminal background, and how he ended up going to jail in the first place. And that also is not made not only crystal clear about why he was there. They kind of just give a general, he was convicted of the sentences. Daniel's roughly 9 years and 8 months in prison solitary represents the majority of the 16 years he spent in the State Department of Corrections custody between 2004 and 2020 on a second-degree murder conviction. That's it. That's what they tell us about his background. And I think the background is kind of important here because, again, when we're dealing with someone who is in solitary confinement, if they're incredibly dangerous, that might explain why they're in solitary confinement. He's a murderer. He stabbed his roommate at the time. This was back in 2003. And he was trying to cover it up when unexpectedly a friend of the victim happened to come to the house. And at that point, according to the lawyers and the judge, because this went through the appellate court as well, came out and said, oh, when that happened, he had to quickly change his tactic. And then he just claimed that the roommate attacked him. But there was no credibility to any of what it is that he was saying on the stand. And so they rejected it. They found him to be guilty. They found him guilty of second-degree intentional murder and second-degree felony murder. They say the court sentenced Daniel to 206 months for the murder and another 24 months for a deadly weapon sentence enhancement. That on top of restitution that would have had to have been paid. I don't know if he paid it or he could pay it. But at the end of the day, this is a bad guy. He's a dangerous guy. I'm not going to pretend that it's somehow heroic or virtuous to fight on his behalf. It's not. It says a whole lot about you. Now, is everyone, you know, entitled to certain treatment and rights, no matter how much of a cretin they are? Yeah. Does it mean I'm going to bend over backwards and die on a hill for some of these people? No, not even close. And it just feels like the reason why you don't get some of these additional details either in the story or up front instead of being buried is because they want you to think, I believe, that he's just some innocent guy caught up in the nasty and chaotic immigration system. I think that's the intent here. That's at least to me how it reads. So sorry, I'm out. I don't really care whether or not you think his treatment was unjust. What was unjust was the murder of a person who will never get to see old age, will never get to have a family. That's on him. And that he's in this country illegally at the time that he committed the crime makes it even worse, because that's a preventable crime. So, sorry, don't really care. Meanwhile, I don't understand. This one I was going to do on the show yesterday, but I didn't. I don't understand a story, or at least the interest in a story. It's an interesting story, I suppose, for people who, I don't know, are really passionate about potatoes. But according to our sister station, Car News Radio, the title of the story, "The Spud Battle Continues on Whether to Change the Classification of a Potato." Who cares? Why do people care about that? It says claims that the U.S. government is trying to reclassify a popular vegetable as a grain are half-baked. That's what one government agency claims, but the issue is far from settled. The humble tuber caused a stir earlier this week when Washington's U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell and about a dozen other senators sent a letter to the head of the Agricultural Department urging the USDA not to change the potato's classification from a vegetable or a grain. Jay Inslee's office weighed in, issuing a statement that reclassifying the potato would, quote, create challenges for the industry, consumer confusion, and conflict with nutritional science. No, it won't. None of it will. None of that is true. There's no conflict with nutritional science, because people who are eating these kinds of empty carbs, they don't care. They don't care about the nutritional science. But in a statement to Cairo News Radio, the USDA said its Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee is not and has not discussed changing the classification of potatoes. So where exactly did this come from, this claim, that apparently even got way to the Senate? Cam Quarles is the chief executive officer of the National Potato Council. Yes, there's a National Potato Council. He says that the USDA committee is at least looking into the idea. He said they, the committee, asked for public comment around the ability for potatoes to be reclassified or interchangeable with grains. Now, the USDA, if this is true and they asked for the public comment, and there's a link here that seems to indicate indeed they did ask for public comment, that means they are considering it. This, you know what this story reminds me of? It reminds me of the claim coming from the White House, and the USDA counts as from the White House, I think. It's under this administration, that there was never any consideration about the idea of banning natural gas stoves, right? It's, oh, we never talked. That's a lie. And then you go back and you're like, no, this memo says you're interested in pursuing this. So why'd you tell us something otherwise before? They're just lying because they know it might be unpopular. Now, will this be unpopular the same way? No. I suppose it could be really unpopular within the ag industry. That could be true. I don't know if this has any, you know, implications that are completely significant. I'm a naturally curious person, and yet I'll be totally honest. When I saw this story, I was like, who cares? You can label it whatever you want. White potatoes are bad. At the end of the day, you shouldn't be eating white potatoes. Unless, I guess, you're a runner, a distance runner. Okay, have at it, I guess. But this is just kind of silly to me. I suppose I like, in theory, the idea that you're going to have you're going to come to fisticuffs over this idea. You're going to come to fisticuffs over the idea of potatoes being reclassified. I'm going to fight you like you're, you know, insulting my wife or husband, my mom. And then finally, the No Labels group, the centrist group, that I don't know why Fox News calls them influential. I don't know if they're influential. They're clearly not influential from a voting perspective. They might be influential in how they get media coverage, I guess. Maybe that's what they mean. But they say they've been working over a year towards launching a bipartisan third-party 2024 presidential ticket, but they have now since given up. They put out a statement today that said No Labels is ending our effort to put forth a unity ticket in the 2024 presidential election. So perhaps they're not as influential as some might think, and perhaps people really don't want this kind of unity ticket. again, people will say they don't like negative campaigns, they don't like all the chaos, but they still reward it, right? And so I'm not entirely sure I believe that there's an appetite, at least right now, despite all the vitriol, for a quote-unquote unity party. I don't want a Republican and a Democrat on the same ticket. I would like to see compromise amongst the different branches of government, but I don't need to have a president who comes to the table with a compromise to begin with, because compromise is based on your position versus someone else's position, and the compromise can still benefit one side more than the other. And in a case like this, you're guaranteeing that that doesn't happen. And as much as I would want that to happen in the case of, you know, Republicans who aren't in power getting more than they otherwise would. But when Republicans are in power, I want them to get more than they otherwise would against Democrats. So I'm trying to be consistent here. Now, don't know why they made this decision as far as some of the, I don't know, the behind the scenes avenue that they would have to take to get names on ballots. I imagine that played a pretty significant role. But, you know, you've got the death of Joe Lieberman that kind of plays, I guess, into this, because he was a No Labels founding co-chair. He was seen as one of, not for this, but he was seen as a unity style candidate. There was talk when John McCain was running that Joe Lieberman would become his running mate. And they apparently were really, really serious about that. They were close friends, both moderates. Although I don't think McCain was as moderate as people say he became. I don't think he was always that moderate. I don't think he's an extremist by any stretch. And Joe Lieberman, I think, qualifies as a moderate Democrat. I think you got Joe Manchin, for example. He's clearly a moderate. Kyrsten Sinema, who technically changed her party to independent. But, I mean, that's a moderate Democrat. On a lot of the issues that we care about, at least, we would say, okay, I'm with her on that, or I'm with him on that. The question then became, well, who would be that nominee on this ticket? And Chris Christie came out last Thursday, I want to say, saying it's not going to be me. I'm not interested. You had Larry Hogan say that, or at least his name be put in the hat of potentials. He decided to run for something else. Brian Kemp, I don't know whatever happened with that, but no one was going to vote for Brian Kemp for president. And then Joe Manchin, I know several weeks ago, said he's not going to run, or at least he signaled it. And on top of that, you have Nikki Haley, who very clearly has a label on her, and she owns that label. She proudly wears it. So she said, yeah, that's not going to happen, a while ago. And I think, actually, as I recall, her answer was, I'm not going to do that. I do have a label. It's Republican or conservative. Now, I know some people don't like her right now, but that's on you. She's very clearly a conservative. End of story. And also, end of podcast. I'll see you tomorrow.